The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So I thought I'd share a few reflections with you, and then we'll have time to talk. I really appreciated the wonderful talk that Kim Allen gave last week on dukkha. And I thought it might be useful today to acknowledge dukkha in the context of being one of the three characteristics of conditioned existence. And these three characteristics are dukkha, anicca, and anatta, which are translated, dukkha is often translated as unsatisfactoriness or suffering. Anicca is translated sometimes as impermanence. I actually prefer inconstancy, this quality of experience to come and fade and not be with us forever. And the third, anatta, is often translated as not self, sometimes as insubstantiality. I like to think of it as no fixed nature. We and the things around us have no fixed nature. We're changing all the time. So one way that this is expressed in the suttas is like this. One perceives, if we're caught up in the three characteristics, one perceives permanence in the impermanent, satisfactoriness in the unsatisfactory, self in what is not self, and beauty in the repulsive. So in other words, we develop these delusions around these three characteristics of human existence. We take it to be the case that first we think we can find permanent happiness in people, in situations, and in things we like or find pleasant. If only we can arrange our lives just right and hang on to the way we've arranged everything to be pleasant or the way we want, life will work out. That's kind of what anicca is about. The second is that we think we can rely on people, situations, or things for happiness, that we will find satisfaction, and that satisfaction will last if we play our cards right. So that's dukkha. Things are not satisfying. They are unsatisfying, or they are satisfying for a while, and then that goes away. And there's suffering and stress. And the third, this idea that of anatta, this mistake of thinking that people, situations, and things can have some fixed nature that we can attach to and count on. So many of us may have been quite surprised in our lives to spend decades with a particular friend and then find they're very different than we thought they were, or they changed. So they did not have the fixed self that we were counting on. So when we get caught in these three delusions that are easy mistakes to make, they result in ways that we perceive things, think about things, develop ideas about life in ways that are distorted, that really are not aligned with reality. And so that's just a brief statement about the three characteristics of conditioned existence. These kinds of distortions can keep us stuck in dissatisfaction, stress, and suffering because we keep trying to go back and count on things to be lasting, things to be satisfactory, and things to have a fixed, reliable nature. So what helps us break through that kind of delusion? Well, the very thing that we're doing here today, insight meditation, vipassana, is considered to be what helps us recover. Because by doing this meditation again and again on a very consistent basis, we start to see things as they really are and not as they appear to be, nor as we want them to be, but how they actually show up. So in our meditation just now, we were experiencing what was here, what was prominent in awareness right now in the body, in the feeling tone, in the mind state, in the thoughts. Not what we wanted it to be. It could be pleasant, it could be unpleasant, it could be neither. How it was. So seeing things as they really are means seeing this impermanent, unsatisfactory, and not self nature of human experience in the world. And when we hear reference to the world in the suttas, it's actually not the external world to which it refers. It's our experience in this human body with this consciousness. So our minds create a world in which we then live mentally. To get past this delusion and line up with reality, we have to begin to experience those aspects of our lives that are affected by inconstancy, that are affected by unsatisfactoriness, and that don't have a fixed nature. So we see these three things by experiencing our own bodily and mental processes through meditation, and we begin to see things as they really are. We can see also how ignoring these characteristics results in coming back to dissatisfaction, stress, and suffering. And instead, choice opens up. We start to be able to see that we don't need to treat things the same way we always have. We can instead make a choice that leads towards freedom. So I'm particularly interested today in anicca, the characteristic of inconstancy or impermanence. Because in some ways it is actually the keystone for the other two. So sense phenomena are inconstant or impermanent and can't be relied on as a lasting source of happiness. They're dukkha, so they're unsatisfactory. They're unreliable. And because they're inconstant, they are also not worth relying on as me, myself, or mine, not worth identifying with. The way Bhikkhu Nyanamoli puts it, puts inconstancy or impermanence is, whatever is, will be, was. So whatever is not going to be here forever. It's going to be a was at some point. And modern science really shows us that reality is dynamic. You know, we've studied chemistry and physics, probably most of us in school, and we see the world is comprised of ecosystems that are inextricably linked and affect each other, and that each thing in the ecosystem is in a process of a constant state of change. In fact, in Buddhist practice, one of the beautiful reminders we get of impermanence are actually the flowers, candles that people put on altars. Those are actually signs, not of offering something to a deity. They're really signs of things that decay, that fade, that die, that pass, that the candles blow out, flowers decay. From the minute we cut them, you know, they're at this beautiful moment of freshness, and then they start to decline. So reminders of this are actually all around us. And there are times when we easily see it. So I had this beautiful experience a little over a year ago of going on a nature retreat in Arizona. And we'd get up early in the morning and sit in meditation and then have breakfast in this valley that had hillsides on either side. And one of the hillsides featured this spectacular rock formation. So most of us would start sitting and breakfasting facing that rock formation. And at first, the sky was just the lightest kind of gray, and the rock formation was all in shades of gray. And as we sat and the sun rose, color appeared in the sky. It became this intense blue. And then as it rose higher, it was like a shade was gradually being lowered across the scene, And at the top of the mountain, there were these red rocks and deep green bushes. And then they're gradually revealed more and more as the shade dropped until the sun reached the bottom of the valley and the light brown soil was just bathed in sunlight. And the rock formations were these beautiful red sandstone glory, pieces of glory. So, you know, that was a really obvious impermanence. The sun rises, sun sets. And so being outdoors all day, every day, and camping in a tent at night, I also became aware of the impermanence of heat and cold. So I started each day feeling pretty cold and looking forward to and appreciating the point when the sun was high enough overhead that I was, you know, soaking in warmth. In fact, I'd keep all my layers of clothing on until I was nice and hot. And then by the time we were sitting in the middle of the day, I was peeling off the layers and ducking into the shade of the bushes in order to be able to handle the heat. By the late afternoon sitting, the sun sank, and once again, I was putting on layer after layer of clothing. So the experience changed at a rate that made it really easy to observe change and impermanence every day. Of course, all of us get to experience plenty of inconstancy that requires much more acute awareness to see the change. You know, we're so distracted by all the events and activity in our lives over long periods of time that we can miss slow change. So, you know, when I was a young adult, I remember burning the midnight oil. You know, I would sometimes, in the profession that I was in, sometimes we had intense deadlines and I'd stay up all hours, I mean, maybe even all night to complete it. And then, you know, a decade or so passed, a couple decades, and I was trying to work on a paper that I was really interested in at late at night, early in the morning, and I would fall asleep while I was typing. So I was like, oh, huh, something's changed. I can't burn the midnight oil anymore. And then these days, I was spending time thinking, why am I so tired all the time? What is wrong with me? Until I recognized that at this age, the body needs a nap in the afternoon. And if I don't get that nap, I feel tired. So some change creeps up on us. You know, we don't really realize, wow, what's wrong? We think, what's wrong with me? And it's just that time has passed and the body has aged and things have changed. So we no matter what we do, these processes go on. Some changes are even more slow than that, and human beings have a hard time tracking them. They're so slow. But this particular sutta excerpt shines some light on this process for me. So I'll read from it. It would be better, bhikkhus, if an uninstructed, ordinary person regarded this body made of the four great elements as oneself, rather than the mind. For what reason? This body is seen to continue for a year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, and even more. But that which is called the mind is called thought, is called consciousness. One moment arises and ceases as another, continually both day and night. So this is kind of a weird little excerpt that says we'd be better off thinking of ourselves as our bodies than our minds, because consciousness keeps arising and passing. But it's actually not really endorsing either one. It's just talking to us about how we can miss the fact that things are constantly changing. It's actually even easier in a way to miss the constant changes in the mind, because we get so preoccupied by our activities of living. We get preoccupied in concepts, views, ideas, and we completely construct some sort of continuous view of reality, whereas it's actually changing constantly. Some things are changing rapidly and some very, very slowly. And the changes that are so that are beyond our attention because we're preoccupied or because they're so gradual can suddenly create tons of difficulty. So often these three characteristics are not regarded as practices. They're not something you're going to sit down and do, but they're more descriptions of awareness that begins to make itself known with more experience of mindfulness. That said, since we've been introduced to the idea that things are impermanent, that things are unsatisfactory, and that things are not self, we can start with the mind, start with seeing it, thinking it, knowing it, and then it can filter its way down into our experience until it's really integrated and known on a very embodied gut level, where it's like, oh, it's so obvious that we never forget it again. That's when we're fully realized or fully awakened. So because there's that process of starting with knowing it as a piece of thinking, I really appreciate that Tanisaru Bhikkhu points out a couple ways we can misinterpret anicca, this quality of inconstancy. He says one way to misinterpret it is to mean that happiness lies in realizing we have to savor and enjoy all these moment-to-moment experiences, these temporary pleasures of life, without clinging, because they're fleeting. So we're just going to enjoy each of these moments. Like, we're really going to, ooh, this is wonderful while it's here. The other thing he says we might do is we might take this inconstancy idea to mean that we can change ourselves or outside circumstances when conditions are not making us happy, so that we can always have hope. Like, oh, I can just make it better. So the problem he sees with these is that if we take inconstancy or anicca in these ways, we'll always be chasing happiness. And he says, that's not the question. That's not what we're doing with this. We're not trying to use anicca to chase happiness. So I thought this was really interesting that he says this. And what he points to instead is a question that the Buddha recommended we ask ourselves. And it's this: what, when I do it, will lead to my long-term well-being and happiness? _ long-term. Not temporary gratification. Long-term well-being and happiness. So another sutta quote that for me dovetails with this: the perceiving of impermanence, developed and frequently practiced, removes all sensual passion, removes all passion for material existence, removes all passion for becoming, removes all ignorance, removes and abolishes all conceit of I am. So this points to, we're not trying to chase temporary gratification through the senses or through some way we can make life be just so, or something that we can be like, I'm going to be this person or I'm going to be that person. Instead, this process of impermanence is going to, combined with awareness, enable us to remove all that as this constant chasing our own tail. We'll be able to access lasting happiness when we finally have this integrated, embodied way of getting that addiction to all of this worldly stuff is not going to lead to lasting peace or lasting end of suffering. We can find lasting happiness when we see that getting stuck on some fixed idea of who we are, what this is, what we need to get, or what we need to control in our lives to make it a certain way is actually part of stress and dissatisfaction. So one recommendation I read as I was studying this is not to just throw away experiences on the other hand either, not just to go, oh, well, you know, that's inconstant, that's impermanent, no good, no use, but rather to know in it, to discern in it, the generosity in it, the virtue in it, and also the mental absorption that can arise through consistent mindfulness of change. So we can actually watch change flowing through as we did in our meditation. We can know change as it's arising and passing and foster this settled, absorbed quality of mind that sees the virtues, the generosities, and the freedom from suffering. This is, you know, it's subtle, but I appreciate the encouragement in not first of all, in knowing that these three characteristics are things that we will become increasingly aware of, and they'll move from our heads down into an embodied way of being as we continue to practice. They'll become more and more realizations that are just part of the fabric of how we are, and that it's not going to come through our chasing, trying to change ourselves or trying to grab one temporary pleasure after another. So those, I think those are helpful hints. That's how I would regard them. So kind of a big topic for me, a subtle topic, but I thought I might bring that in on the heels of what Kim shared about dukkha last week and see what you all thought of it or how it might